the show today, we have No Net Solutions President and CEO Andy Jennings talking about his new book, Heroes, Villains, and Drunk Old Men.
NAFQ Services offers a peer-vetted portfolio of trusted providers. Our preferred partners are your proven partners. Their support enables NAFQ to be the most powerful advocate for credit unions. NAFQ Services, supporting credit union success for over 40 years.
Welcome to our show and on Eddie's program. We have a very special guest, Mr. Andy Jennings. The third. Well, I don't know if you're the third, but I thought I'd throw that on there.
It sounds super dignified when you say that. Thank you.
It was very dignified. Well, welcome to the show once again, Andy. You're one of our favorite recurring guests, as always. And you have done some amazing things since you were last on. You are like Mr. Speaker Extraordinaire. You've written a book, which we're going to talk about here. You've been featured in National Geographic for your photography, and you have a lovely dog in your chair behind you.
Right there, man. It's awesome.
That's probably the pinnacle right there.
Yeah, I'm super proud of that right there. And if she actually stays there and doesn't either, eat the chair or does some sort of, event back behind me, this is going to be a good interview.
So
yay us.
We're starting up good. So, just to give folks a quick recap on you, because you were at Forum Credit Union for 13 years or something like that?
Almost 14 years,
And you were like vice president of, gosh, I can't remember your exact title.
I was vice president of organizational development.
There you go.
And I had the pleasure of just helping them, just teaming with the rest of their staff to help develop them and help them achieve their goals. And it was one of the best rides of my life.
Right on. And now you are president and CEO of No Net Solutions. Give yourself a quick plug on that as well.
Well, what I do is I help folks basically change their world. I help them tell a better story about the work they do both at work and at home. And help develop them, develop their strengths, and help them serve and lead others sacrificially and in a way that leaves a lasting impact.
Indeed. And you are quite the penman as well, or the writer, as we shall say here. And you've been featured in CU Insight and, gosh, probably a myriad of publications. But some of the ones that stand out for me was The Night the Dog Blew Up, the vasectomy episode, and those are some of the ones that will not knock you on your socks. So,
which is a really interesting combination of stories when you put them together like that.
Yes.
So, this could either intrigue people to listen to the rest of the interview or call the authorities and have me arrested. It's been fun.
Well, let's get to your book because that's going to be our main topic today. And the title is called Heroes, Villains, and Drunk Old Men. And I want to know about the title. What's the story behind it? Because that is intriguing me from the get-go.
Well, it's based off of my most requested keynote and one that I've done, I would say, probably almost 100 times just in the last 7 years alone. And to be able to share stories of people who are changing the world, both real and imagined. See, the thing is, I love stories, and I love the stories that people tell. And I love the stories that we see on the big screen. I love the stories that we see on the small screen. I love the stories that are happening just around the corner or even inside our own homes. Each one of us on this call, in this interview that we rub up against every single day, they're on a journey. They're going from where they are now to where they want to be. And I love the process that we go through to get there. Mm-hmm. And that whole process of starting off small and becoming bigger and better than you ever thought you could be, that storytelling pattern called the hero's journey has been woven and baked into basically every single story you've ever heard ever in your life. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially the plot of every movie you've ever seen. And we go to those movies and we watch those characters develop on TV and in movies. Partially for entertainment value, certainly, but we do that because we want to see ourselves. We mm-hmm. see someone there and we identify with them and we go, I could do that. Mm-hmm. What this book tries to do is take that storytelling pattern and the truths that are in it and takes examples from very popular stories that we know from the silver screen, plus also examples from real life people who have lived these things out to help folks get inspired to follow where they're meant to go, more importantly, to serve others sacrificially and to leave a mark on this world that desperately needs folks that are shining a light.
Indeed.
So So it's trying to help people become heroic and heroically serve others. It's trying to help them avoid becoming the villain in their own story and to have a completely different look at what villainy really is. Mm-hmm. And then bring it back home to share some real life stories of some formerly drunk old men who have actually made all of this possible.
So that's
where all of this come from. And it's for me, it's been a dream come true. Mm-hmm. It's been one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Yeah, that.
But it's been one of the most meaningful things that I've done. I'm super proud about it, and I can't wait for others to read it and tell me what they think about it.
Me neither, and just in time for the holidays. And this is going to be a perfect Christmas gift for sure. So what was the spark that prompted you to write it? What kind of got you off the couch and start pecking away at the typewriter?
Well, it's the dog, first of all.
Really?
Really.
The main motivation.
So the biggest influence for me was my wife. My wife has been my biggest cheerleader. She has been my biggest supporter. She's also been my biggest burr in the saddle. For years, she has been telling me, Andy, you have to write this book. Andy, you have to write this book. Andy, you have to write this book. And I've been sitting back because I'm super mature going, no, I don't want to write the book. No one's going to read it. And it's funny because this whole message was actually born out of a previous keynote that I did called Training Tips from Tinseltown. It was using a lot of movie examples mm-hmm. there too and doing some things like that. And I actually pitched that manuscript to about 25 different book agents about 6.5 years ago.
Yeah.
None of them got back with me. It was like, it wasn't even like a rejection letter. It was just silence. It was indifference. It was nothing. And I was going to spike the whole project and said, you know, forget this. This is stupid.
Right.
Until Ron Shevlin, here's the other influence.
Oh, yeah.
I shared this message at a CU water cooler event about 4 years ago in Tennessee. And he's been one of my biggest supporters. I love Ron to death. And he says, Andy, he says, and I asked Ron, I said, what did you think of this talk? And he says, do you really want to know? Now, that question from Ron Shev is a dangerous one. It's
very,
like a weaponized question because you know he's going to give it to you straight. And that's why I love, respect the man so much.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I like the talk and I like you using the movie stuff, but you have to ground it in reality. You have to talk about real people. And that was like a switch was flipped. And I was going all around this and how am I going to do this? And I kept talking about it to Carla, my wife, and she kept saying, well, you just have to write the book. You just have to do it. I said, I don't want to. Then the third character, the third biggest spark was Denise Wymore.
Oh, yeah, Denise.
I have known Denise now for... golly, it seems like about forever. Mm-hmm. Well over 10 years. And she has been, again, another burr in my saddle, another great muse and a mentor for me. And she, like early part of last year, 2016, she says, I dare you to write that book. And so it's like, okay, fine.
Oh, wow.
You're daring me? And my wife's telling me I got to do it? So I sat down and I did it. And I'm happy that I did it. And I'm really grateful for the folks that believed in me enough, that loved me enough to tell me you need to do this and wouldn't let me off the hook. So this book, and you'll see it when you pick it up, it is dedicated to my daughters. It's dedicated to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Without any of them, none of this would be possible. But it was a group effort, and I'm grateful for the people that spoke truth to me. And like I said, wouldn't let me off the hook.
That's what it's all it takes sometimes is a few people out there getting a fire under your rear end and getting you going there. So, and that kind of segues to my next question is like, what was the biggest challenge in writing this book? Because you said there was, I mean, a lot of it obviously was stemmed off of your speaking, your speaking topics and stuff, but some of it was personal as well. So what was the biggest challenge of this?
Yeah, I think there's, and these are really in no particular order. I think part of it, when you are creating something that is considered to be, you know, artistic, whether it's writing or photography or a broadcast or something that you've kind of pulled together with your own hands and you put it out into the world, you're always concerned about what people are going to think of it. You're always concerned about what people are going to do with it. And that nagging insecurity was one of the big things that held me back from doing it for a number of years. They kind of kept me in this mindset of, no, I'm not going to do it because I was afraid of what people would think.
Right. That's a lot of people.
I know. Once I start removing myself from that, though, some of the biggest things also, too, was just finding time. You know, I'm still doing, you know, I'm speaking about, you know, 40, 50 times a year. I've got client work, all this other stuff. And truly just carving out the time to sit down and write, you know, it's... there's this really romantic notion that people think about writers, that when they sit down, they're going to have a roaring fire and they're going to, you know, have quiet, go out into the woods and be peaceful. Heck no. It's like, I'm like writing the sucker in between loads of laundry, the dog having to go out and trying to, you know, pick up, who's going to pick up the kids from school, because we don't want them to be just roaming the streets.
Right.
So how do you do life while writing about life?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the other biggest things too. And then also knowing what parts to leave out of it. I think one of the best things about book writing especially is and the value is having a good editor.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot trust yourself to be a good editor.
Right.
And I thought, oh no, I'll know exactly what to keep out. I sent it off to someone who I did not know, but his reputation was very, very good. And that dude broke my heart. And I told him to, I said, you need to break my heart, but I had never really been through that process.
Yeah.
So it was one of the hardest parts of it was getting honest feedback from mm-hmm. somebody that has no personal connection with you.
Right.
And that's going to tell it to you straight, but loves the work and what it's trying to do and can see it almost before you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So being able to have the time, being able to have the structure, being able to know what to put in and to leave out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also being willing to have that be weighed and measured. That's a very difficult thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's why I think a lot of people leave books in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be the only one I ever write. I don't know. But I know there are more stories to tell. And I will never be where I want to be with this in terms of being a writer. Writing for me it's difficult and it's arduous. And if you watch me do it, I'll write two sentences and I'll delete out like two thirds of them and then write it like two or three times.
Yeah.
My wife hates watching me write. She would rather, go watch paint dry. But all of that for me has been a process of discipline and a process of humility and kind of getting over myself and getting things out there and realizing that done is better than perfect. This will never be perfect.
Yep.
And I will always have edits. But pushing it out the door and getting it out there, there's somebody that needs to hear this message. And when I've seen the reaction to this message during keynotes,
mm-hmm.
I've seen what it's done to people and through people,
mm-hmm.
I want to do that with other folks.
Right on.
Not because I want them to say, you know, anything about me. I want them to forget me, but remember the heroes that are in this book.
Right.
That's who I want them to know.
Right. Because we all have heroes inside of us, right?
Yeah.
So, that's one of your messages. So,
absolutely.
Very cool. So now, and we already touched on, you know, that your book uses numerous examples from movies. Can you provide just a couple of examples? Because I know in past interviews, we've talked about kind of the teacher-student or the mentor-mentee type of thing. Do you have any examples? And then how do they help? How do you relate that to real life?
Yeah, so I start off with, and there's one thing about the book that I think differentiates it a little bit. And the subtitle of the book is called A Love Story for Real Life. This book is designed to be grounded in real life. And there is a narrative thread that runs all the way through it. Whereas most nonfiction books are a lot of like, you know, this chapter is about this technique and this chapter is about this technique. And there is a little bit of relationship there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one, there's a really a narrative thread that doesn't really become that you see start to coalesce, but really pulls the reader, I think, through it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the examples that I use, I start and basically end with Star Wars. I'm a geek. I'm a nerd. That bookcase right back there, it's got like every single Star Wars book ever. I'm basically just a 12-year-old kid that never...
with a beard.
I know, right? It's awful. So I start with that. I start with some of the techniques and some of the hero's journey ideas that are in Star Wars. I talk a lot about burnout in this book and the cost that burnout and just that mental stress can take. One of the examples I use, one of my favorite ones, it's one from one of my favorite movies called It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
And George Bailey's journey through all of that is a classic case of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
What does it look like when you get burned out? One of the other examples that I use is one of my favorite TV shows is The Office. Dwight, Jim, especially, when you talk about confrontation, conflict resolution, but also seeing the good in someone that you consider to be your villain. Seeing the good and appreciating what they're trying to go after,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that most villains aren't really trying, they're not dead set against me, that they're that they themselves have goals that they are going after for a very good reason, and they see you as the opposition. How can we see and appreciate the journey that everybody is on, and how can we help them get there? There is a way through that, and some of the most transformative stories that have been told in movies is when the hero puts his life on the line for the villain. happens in Star Wars. It happens in the Indiana Jones movies. There's more often than not a moment where the hero sees the villain that he's been trying to vanquish, and the villain is sometimes maybe in distress and looks like he's going to fall to his death, and the hero will actually reach out and try and grab him. You know, the latest Thor movie is out. In the very first Thor movie, that's what happened with Loki, the villain of that movie. All this, and again, I could go on for like a half an hour, but the point is this. Those stories resonate, certainly because of the characters and the colors and these special effects and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
We go there and we go, I want to be like that. Yeah, I may want to have muscles like that, or have an outfit like that, or have, you know, like a wardrobe like that. But we want those character qualities first. For each one of those ideas, I'd also then cement them in reality. I talk about real people that have really done this, to have that sense of, this isn't just pie in the sky going through my Netflix queue. These are real people that have really done this. This is not a perfect process, and it's not an instantaneous process. And I don't share it because I've got it all figured out. And I specifically say this in the book. I'm just one beggar telling a room full of other beggars where to find some bread. That's it. And if I could introduce them to the people that have made this happen, that makes it worth it for me.
Beautiful, beautiful. And there are some techniques that you've used in your career. I mean, you had quite a career. You were like, what was it, crisis counseling or something like that before your credit union career?
Yeah, long time ago. Yeah.
That's huge, Andy. So, I mean, not everybody can do that type of thing. So did you incorporate some of that into, or are these some of the techniques that you're talking about in the book?
So one of the biggest things and I mentioned this earlier about burnout, and I think we've all heard of what burnout, we all have kind of our own idea of what it is, but burnout is the single biggest expense on employer-sponsored medical programs. The Society for Human Resources Management put out an infographic a couple of years ago that talked about the effect that burnout has on productivity. U.S. companies alone, just in 1 year alone, will lose $300 billion in productivity every year because of mental stress and pressure that employees are going through. 1 million employees, and I'm going through some of the infographic now because I'm not nearly smart enough to think of this off the top of my head. 1 million workers miss work each day due to stress.
Goodness.
This employees coming to work but not really being at work, kind of being functionally absent.
Yeah,
that costs companies another $150 billion a year. All this, those are really big numbers. But here's the thing: I think we in credit unions and companies, you can put the name whatever name you want to. There's an epidemic of stress and pressure and burnout that is robbing our best workers of their best years. And it's a subject that certainly as corporate America, but definitely in credit unions, we don't talk about it as much as we need to. We don't talk about the real things that are affecting real people in real life. Now, I'm not saying that every branch and department needs to not open up until noon, until everybody has a nice cry fest and they're kind of getting it all out. There's jobs to do, and sometimes you need to suck it up and deal with it.
True.
But I think that business first, person second mentality has been lost. And it's contrary to the credit union's mission. Mm-hmm. If we really believe in people helping people, then we have to really help people with what's really damaging people.
Yep.
So one of the themes I address in the book is, how do you address burnout? How does it actually manifest itself? And knowing that you're either moving into or out of a burnout cycle, no one's insulated. You're never stationary. And it's never a solitary process. When you think you can do it all by yourself, you will become the villain in your own story. I don't want to see that happen. I want to see people's fires keep burning.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I have the book.
And it seems like such an intangible thing, too. You don't really, it's kind of a creep factor, you know? You don't know it until you're there.
Most fires that you light, they don't go out instantaneously. They lose their fire, they lose their heat, they lose their brightness because of a slow loss of fuel. And we've got a ton of people out there that are walking wounded right now. And there's a ton of folks that are dealing with a whole day's worth of work before they even clock in. Credit unions especially need to have a mechanism and a way to have that conversation and to have employees be able to realize they're not doing it all by themselves, that this is the cooperative spirit tangibly made real and writ large.
Yep.
We have any industry in the country, in the world, has this responsibility, has this right. We need to lead out in this, and hopefully this book starts that conversation.
Yeah, and that's, oh my gosh, that was another great, Andy, you're in my head, man, because that was another great segue to my next question, because how significant have credit unions played in your life? I mean, not just the business aspect of it, but it's kind of like the philosophy of credit unions, because when you're looking at credit unions from the outside in, it's just another financial institution, but when you work within the industry, it's like, wow, there's a lot here. It's a much deeper, deeper industry than one would think looking at it from the outside. So how did they influence you? Was there any kind of influence in the book?
Oh, absolutely. This book doesn't happen. And the books actually because there's actually four books that I released at the same time, mm-hmm, because I'm an idiot. I just try to do it all at once.
Talk about burnout. Come on.
I know, right? None of these things would have happened without, I mean, just amazing people in the credit union industry. I mean, I've got like three paragraphs of just names in the back of the book of folks primarily from this industry. Jenny Budra, my old boss, Denise Wymore, Julie Ferguson, Ronaldo Hardy, mm-hmm, Tim McAlpine, mm-hmm, Matt Davis. Yeah. I mean, I have been so blessed to have great people that I've been able to, that have, I can call up or that have spoken to me and said, hey, I want to share some things with you. None of this stuff happens. Nothing that I have in my life would have been possible without credit unions. And most of my speaking is still in the credit union industry. Yeah. Most of my work is still in the credit union industry. I love who we are. I love who we want to be. And there are some significant challenges out there. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that there is sometimes I think we need to always question a cooperative spirit and always check ourselves to thinking, are we just drinking our own Kool-Aid? But I think also we need to ask ourselves, how true are we being to the cooperative spirit? Are we calling it a cooperative spirit, or are we just making a really creative take on competition? I don't want us to lose our soul. And that starts with not overlooking the individual people at our credit unions that make us work.
Yeah.
I love this industry. It has been better to me than I ever expected and than I ever deserved. Hopefully this book gives back to people and helps them take one more step in their journey.
Awesome. Awesome. And there are eight questions. You mentioned in there are eight questions for every hero. Can you provide us with a couple of the outstanding ones, or maybe two or three?
So when I mentioned four books, I wasn't lying. This is the actual book, Heroes, Villains, yes, and Drunk Old Men, but I put together three little ancillary booklets, ancillary, word of the day, ancillary booklets that people can use to keep track. So one of the concepts in here, about eight questions for every hero, it's designed to help people remember their journey. We're wired to forget most everything in our lives. That's why when we drive home from work and go from work to home or home to work, we don't remember what happened during it because we've done it so often and done it so much by habit that we forget all those really rote things. That's why the days are long, but the years are short. Mm-hmm. So in the eight questions for every hero, what I'm asking people is that when you see yourself on a journey, it could be for career advancement, it could be to become a better parent or a better spouse, weight loss, personal improvement, whatever. Mm-hmm. These eight questions are designed to help people really become a student of their journey, to ask these eight questions of themselves at the beginning of the journey, mm-hmm, at the middle of it, and at the end of it. And some of the ones, I mean, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you, Mike, there's not a whole lot of new wisdom here. I'm not going to stand here going, hey, you know what? I came up with eight questions. No one's ever asked eight questions before. Eight, that's crazy. Seven maybe, but eight, never. I'm not going to say that. But this is just my personal take with it.
Sure.
I mean, someone was like, it's just asking people, what is it you want? What is it you really honestly want? Not anybody else. Not things you may have learned or adapted from someone else. What is it that you truly want, and why do you want that? And I'm not going to go through all of them, but another vital question is, who's going to be your mentor? Who is going to guide you on this journey?
Yeah.
You can't do it alone, because if you try to do this alone, you're going to become the villain in your own story. There's no exceptions, period, end of story.
Yep.
What successes are you looking forward to? Where are you going to screw up? Then we end with, what are you going to give away? What are you going to bless people with at the end of your journey? Mm-hmm. Because if you hold it all onto yourself, mm-hmm, that's where villainy starts. And then where are you going to go next?
Mm-hmm.
So they can see a sense of place and of movement, and realizing that once you hit the finish line, there is no finish line.
Right,
you keep
right.
getting to evolve, and you get to help other people evolve too. That's what I want that book to do. So all that concept is in there, and that little notebook is there to help people remember their journeys so they can look back on a rich life well lived, and then also to pass these stories on to other people. If they just stay in here, we miss a lot of the blessing. when we pass on to other people, the value of stories is them being able to be listened to and be heard by other people. If no one hears our stories, we're just the crazy guy on the corner talking to ourselves.
That's right.
Stories need an audience. Stories need willing hearts and people to tell them and people to listen to them and people to live them out.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's what the book can do.
Yeah, and that reminds me of a book called, I don't know if you may have heard of it, it's From Success to Significance, and I can't remember the name of the author, but this guy attained everything. He was the CEO of, you know, a Fortune 50 company, something like that. But once he attained this top position, he said, okay, what else is there to life? And that's when he became the success, but now what? Then he wanted to be significant, and that entailed giving back. And that just popped in my head, because when you start giving back and sharing, like you were saying, the stories, wow, that's when it really sticks, and that's when the significance happens.
Yeah, the end of a hero's journey is never them getting the trophy. The end of the hero's journey is what did they do with what they've received, and blessing it and passing along to other people. It's the stopping of that process when that need and that notion of passing it on to others has been stymied or stifled, or they convince themselves that, oh, I earned this, no one else can get this. That's where disintegration starts to happen. That's why sequels happen, because the hero forgot to give stuff away.
Oh yeah, one more thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, Andy, I am just, I'm over the moon about this. I'm so happy for you. Stoked for you.
Thank you.
And I know, I want to get this out there. I want to promote the heck out of this for you. So to wrap up, where can we get it? Obviously Amazon, but website, all that type of stuff. Where can folks go to get it?
So they can go to andyjanning.com, and there is a section there at the very top of my page called andyjanning.com/book. It has information about how to order it. Here's the thing, Mike, I'm going to offer your listeners an exclusive opportunity. So when they buy either the hardcover or ebook version of Heroes, Villains, and Drunk Old Men, which is available on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com.
Oh, cool. Okay.
When they send the paid receipt for the book, print or ebook, to book@andyjanning.com, when they send that receipt, I will send them the PDF ebook versions of 8 Questions for Every Hero.
Cool.
I'll also send them the prequel to Heroes, Villains, and Drunk Old Men called
Voices,
The Reasons Why I Almost Didn't Write the Book, and then also Behind the Shots. This is the stories of the photographs that appeared in the book itself and some of the narratives that prompted them and why they're in there. I will send those 3 PDFs to people when they send me their paid copy of the book.
Dude, right on. Bonus, bonus, bonus.
Absolutely.
Love it. Andy Janning, man, myth, the legend. You continue to blow minds. Congrats, man. I'm so happy for you. Well done. Keep up the good work.
Ah, thanks.
Stoked.
Thank you so much, buddy.
You're welcome.
It.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike.
MathQ Services offers a peer-vetted portfolio of trusted providers. Our preferred partners are your proven partners. Their support enables NAFQ to be the most powerful advocate for credit unions. NAFQ Services, supporting credit union success for over 40 years.